Coming up on 5:06, your time check brought to you by Clarkson Jewelers, an officially licensed Rolex jeweler. Brad Thompson and Chris Rongi are out today. The voice of the Blues, Chris Kerber, is here, former Blue and a great Blues alumni and friend of the station. Reed Lowe is here as well. Take it or leave it. Coming up in a moment, send in your text to the Hot Shots text line 65780. Before we get to Teoli, everybody is looking to jump on the latest trend, but not all trends are worth it. According to a recent survey done by YouGov, nearly 41% of 18 to 24-year-olds are ditching deodorant. That percentage was even higher for people aged 25 to 34 years old. But don't worry, young people aren't that dirty. YouGov also reports that millennials and Gen Zers don't lack hygiene in other areas. For example, they surpass other age groups when it comes to washing their hair every day. They just don't use deodorant.
I listen, all I know is when you said other areas, I was hoping you were talking social areas, not body areas.
Go ahead.
Gentlemen, a 103-year-old woman, broke the record for her age group by sprinting the 100-meter dash at the National Senior Games in 46 seconds. Sprinter Julia Hurricane Hawkins of Louisiana also clocked the 50-meter dash at 21.06 seconds, holding the top spot for her age group. Take it or leave it, at 103, Julia Hurricane Hawkins would beat all of us in the 100-meter dash.
I'll take it, and I wonder if she's had that nickname most of her life or just recently.
Just recently. How about that? 103, and I'm going to take it too.
Yeah, I'll take it. You can't argue with that. I'm not going to be the odd man out there.
You almost can't. Listen, if you went head-to-head with her in a race,
you can't beat her.
You can't beat her.
That's a great point.
Yeah. I mean, you can't blow her away.
Yeah. You can't trip her.
Yeah, you could do that. Curbs.
All right, guys, take it or leave it. The Blues' first pick in this weekend's draft is 62nd. All right. Take it or leave it. Doug Armstrong will make a move and move up to pick earlier.
I'm going to take that.
Oh, is this what he wants or what I would do?
I don't know the rules. I just had to read the line here. I wrote the line, but I'm just reading
what he will do. Let's go with that.
I think he will make a strong effort to move up. I don't think they should. I think they should wait and trade Jake Allen sometime in the summertime, restock for their draft for next year, maybe get a prospect and deal with that.
All right. Losey.
Mine is about my good buddy. I love him, Alex Steen. We were just talking about this. Towards the end of the season and during the season, he's got 2 years left at right around $6 million production. There is question on whether or not that's a great contract. Blues have never had somebody get bought out of a contract. Watch him play in the playoffs and how instrumental he was on the way to the Stanley Cup. Take it or leave it. Does Alex Steen get bought out this summer? Wondering what his next 2 years are going to be like, if he's going to be able to recapture what he did in the Stanley Cup.
I will leave it because his leadership in that room is part of the invaluable aspect of it. And he showed that by not only not even blinking when moved out of the top six role, but then turned that bottom six role into maybe one of the most valuable ones of the playoffs.
Yeah. Into a top six role.
Correct.
Yeah, he's a key element of that team. I'll leave it as well. And it's not like Berube is going to say what Bruce Cassidy said about Backes, that he's going to have to compete for a fourth line spot. Alexander Steen goes into training camp as a key part of the top 12.
Correct.
He's going to play.
He's going to get his 14 to 15 minutes a night.
Yeah.
Right? Is that about where he's going to be at?
You know what? His
can he handle 19 minutes?
No, no. And he doesn't need to. And Scott Mellenby, remember when Scott Mellenby came in, Losey, and you're part of that team.
Yep.
Scott Mellenby said, I'm so much better off right now playing 15 minutes a game more than 19.
Yep.
The other thing about Steen's contract is that the cash goes down for the Blues.
Correct.
In the next 2 years. The cap stays the same, but it's structured so that the cash goes down. So it's really, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense for them to buy him out from a cash standpoint.
No, that part it doesn't, unless you're just saving cap space. But I don't see the need for that one at this point in time, especially with the team having won. It's an interesting question if you didn't win the Stanley Cup this year.
Just for the record, I'm leaving it too. I don't want to be the odd man out again. I'm just trying to bring the questions, guys.
Believe you me, that was talked about on this show during the season when things were happening in December and January. Big Sis, what do you got for us?
Take it or leave it, Ryan O'Reilly retires as a Blue.
I'm going to take it.
I'll take that.
Wow. All right, right now I'll take it. Right now I'll take it.
On the stage at the thing, did you talk about how he's going to be here? He's got a big, long contract.
Well, see, I mean, I was exaggerating. It wasn't 35 years, but it is another five, so, you know, or four after this year. But,
heck of a year.
Yeah, right now I'll take it. What the heck? I don't want to run a feel-good story out.
Take it or leave it, St. Louis could support the Rays part-time better than Montreal could.
I'm going to leave that simply because Montreal is a good big market that I think if it is given a competitive team, will support it. There's a lot of baseball fans in Montreal.
Without a doubt, 100% I'm going to leave it. And I'm going to add the caveat because I know you guys talked about it earlier. I don't see how in the hell that plan works. You're setting the stage for them to move.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, without question. And the only way I see, I leave it too, but like if it was to happen, they have to be called the Expos again, not the Marlins.
Randy, what was the game that was played here? What was the neutral site game that was played here a couple of years ago because of winter or rain? There was a what two teams came into town?
We did have a game.
Was it the Giants or was it the a neutral site? A rainout game was played here a couple years ago. I'm blanking on it.
I don't even remember what it was, but you're right. But here's the thing. If they make the playoffs, what happens then? Who gets home field, Montreal or Tampa, if you're splitting your games for a playoff series?
Hey, the Islanders just dealt with that where they wanted to play more of their games at the Coliseum. But the league said, no, we're not going to let you do that because we don't want you moving back out there and put them back in Brooklyn. And that's a train ride, much less countrywide.
Yeah, right.
Well, and they didn't have the success there either, and the fans wanted it to be on Long Island, so I don't see how that works. Logistically, that's a nightmare.
Montreal's a big enough city though. That's not a minor league baseball town. That's a big time town.
Big time.
We had St. Louis and Scott Barry on a few weeks ago. He put $400 down on the Blues to win the Stanley Cup. He won $100,000 off of it. Take it or leave it, he has to take at least $1,000 and put it on a Blues repeat.
Yeah, I'll take it. Why not?
I'll take that.
Yep, I'm with you. I'll take it.
I might go five.
Depending on what the odds are. He was going to make a significant contribution to Blues for Kids too. He understands where he is, and he's a fan of the show. We appreciate that. So, what a great story that is. Another
awesome.
One.
Really cool. Yeah.
Yep, he stuck with his conviction that the Blues would win the Stanley Cup, and it paid off for him.
It paid off. How much fun? I mean, just the video of those guys flying out there was fun.
That was cool.
Fantastic. Thanks, Big Sis.
Thank you.
And thanks for your text to the Hot Shots text line, 65780. Next up, as we roll on in the fast lane on 101 ESPN, the Blues had a lot of impressive traits this year, but their ability to bounce back and put losses behind them may have been their best. That's next on 101 ESPN. That's ESPN.com's Greg Wyshynski yesterday on the Bernie Show with Michelle Smallman here on 101 ESPN talking about Barry Trotz and what Craig Berube was able to accomplish after Game 3 against San Jose in getting this team to be resilient. And everybody deserves credit for this, and Curbs, you're around that team every single day. This is a group of guys I'd never seen anything like this. I've seen teams say, because it's a hallmark of hockey when you lose, hey, we got outworked. But I'd never seen a team for a consistent period of time, 2 or 3 weeks, almost every game they lost, were mentally fragile. That's what they were saying. Then they became, once Berube took over, I think he got them almost immediately to stop saying that, even if they thought they were. They became one of the more mentally tough, resilient teams we've ever seen.
It was phenomenal what happened. And I'll just use an example. You'd lose a game in these playoffs, and it would go high. Your emotions would go high, go low. I mean, how many people thought, oh, my gosh, we just lost Game 6 of the Stanley Cup Final. That was your chance to win it. You're going back into Boston. How nervous were you for the first day and a half? And that's one time where the 2 days in between games really was nerve-wracking. But I'm telling you, you got into the next day or so afterwards, and you got around these players, and you're looking around the locker room, and you're going, ooh, look out, Boston. I mean, I'm telling you, they just flip a switch, and it was like nothing had happened. You went into the locker room the day after Game 3 against San Jose on that hand pass game, and you're going, uh-oh, look out, San Jose. Because this is the difference, too, in listening to a soundbite. And this is why, Randy, you are so good at what you... Randy still goes to press conferences. He goes in the locker rooms. He's one of the few that does it. Because when you look at the body language of a guy when he's asked a question, or his face when he's talking to you or answering a question, it gives you a totally different vibe necessarily than just the soundbite does. You got around this team, and they calmed you down. You got belief when you were around them because you're like, oh, man, they got this. And it's a vibe and a feeling you have. It really was something special.
Yeah, it's fun to watch, and it was fun to watch the transformation of the hockey team that was, in their words, mentally fragile, and then understand that they have to be mentally tough, and how are we going to do that? And watching, and again, it all goes back to, and I said it before, and I know that he doesn't like the accolades, but Larry Robinson's input in that January time where he spent in the dressing room and on the bench and just monitoring things and probably giving some advice and some ideas, like, and then I really noticed that where I really took a hold of that was after the conference finals, or it was either, I think it was the Dallas or the conference finals, I forget which one it was, and he was high-fiving the guys, and he was the first one in the dressing room standing there, and you could tell that he'd built relationships with these guys, these players, and they looked up to him, and they listened to him, and they took into what he said, and you know, these guys were, that nothing bothered them. It was just another chink in the armor, and they just kept doing it time after time, and you're like, that game six, and just like, they're not even bothered by it. Well, and I've always said it, the best attribute of a champion is a terrible memory, and the Blues lived that.
I would think that this is something that you don't lose either. I've wanted the Blues forever. And everybody that's listened to this show for 10 years knows. I wanted them to get Justin Williams. I wanted them to get that veteran guy that had won a cup because they didn't have that guy. And I think that's something that you don't lose when you develop that sort of leadership and that sort of resilience that we're talking about. It doesn't go away. And they've got it now. This core group of players that is going to be around for a while, they understand what winning takes what it looks like.
And Al MacInnis told me on the flight home that everybody is going to be better because of that fact now, because they now know what it takes. You know, all those stories about players walking past and looking in a locker room and seeing not even celebration, but the exhaustion and knowing that that's how they had to get to the next level. The other thing that really happened with Craig Berube and this team is I believe he truly was the first coach under this core group of guys that held everybody accountable the same. And I know, how much times do we talk about accountability in sports? Oh, you got to hold me accountable. Well, I can't hold you accountable if I can't fire you. Okay, so save the lip service, right? But Craig Berube did, and he could. And when I was talking to, for example, Oscar Sundquist, he said, he's hard, but he's fair. I said, what do you mean by hard? He goes, didn't matter if it was me or Vladimir Tarasenko. We both got yelled at the same. And in my role, I appreciate that. In Vladdy's role, he could appreciate that as well. There was no middle ground when it came to that. And when he asked his players to forget about their own personal stats, play hard, and play for your teammates, he got them to buy in. And that is the sole reason they took up. You had the skill. These people that believe that the Boston Bruins were a heavy favorite, forget it. They weren't paying attention. This team had the skill. They just weren't a team.
Yeah.
He made them a team.
Well, and I think one of the other things was, I asked Berube, I think it was in the Dallas series, are you having fun? He said, hell yes, I'm having fun. This is what we all live for. This is what we want to do. And that fun, I think, trickled down to the players. As much as we love Hitch, I don't think the players had fun necessarily playing for Hitch. I think Berube did make it fun for these players to traverse this journey.
Was it, correct me if I'm wrong, was it McCarthy with the Packers and Aaron Rodgers where, you know, when they say, well, do you guys talk about the Super Bowl? You know, some teams, you know, say, well, we're not going to talk about a championship till we get close, right? Wasn't it McCarthy with Aaron Rodgers that said, no, our goal is the Super Bowl, right off the bat? Yeah. And that's what this guy did. Craig Berube went in and said, I know you're a playoff team. You know, and he wasn't afraid to say that. But he also wasn't afraid going into Game 7 to answer the questions. Well, yeah, they were nervous. You should be nervous if you're here at this point. But it's what you do with it. I mean, he just took such a... I've said this before. I think I may have even said it to you. He didn't come in and coach hockey. He came in and he coached men who are playing hockey. You got to coach the people. They know the hockey. Coach the people. And he is a coach of those guys, and that's what made the difference.
I'm sure that 90% of the people, sorry, Lozy, have seen the pre-Game 7 speech from ESPN+. How can you not want to run through a wall when you see something like that.
But here's the thing. Go back and watch every one of them before that. All right? That was his first kind of win it for the Gipper kind of raw speech. You're here because you belong here. Every other one that they had before that was get in there, get on the forecheck, heavy on sticks. Like, it was a very specific game aspect. That was the first one where he went kind of big picture.
And that's exactly where I was going, is when I watched the St. Louis Blues at the beginning of the season compared to the way they played a game at the end of the season, they were a team. And the way that it looked like it was mapped out, and I'm not down at the dressing room every day, but I watch every single game, and I'm watching whether I'm they're on the road and I'm at home or I'm at the rink. I'm at the rink most nights when the Blues are here. And just the way that they played for each other and played within a really, really simple structure. It wasn't complex. It wasn't difficult. But you had to be there when you had to be there. And you had to do it right. And if you didn't do it and one guy fell out of line, it was going to fall apart. And watching them build that structure as a team was one of the coolest things I watched the entire back half of the season.
It's the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN. Coming up, we are going to talk some baseball with our friend, St. Louisan, and the lead anchor for MLB Network, Greg Amson. Singer. He is next on 101 ESPN. Our friend Greg Amzinger of MLB Network will join us momentarily. A lot going on in his life, of course, with MLB heading towards the All-Star break. Only 15 more games for the Cardinals before the All-Star break. And this weekend, we have Albert Pujols back in town, which is remarkable. That here he is in the eighth year of a 10-year contract, guys. The greatest player that many of us have ever seen. One of the greatest players in Cardinal history. And we have not had an opportunity to see him here in St. Louis until the eighth year of a contract.
Isn't that amazing?
How MLB could do that is beyond me.
Is it tied into because of the Cardinals Royals game every year?
That's part of it.
Is that part of it?
Yeah, the fact that the baseball doesn't understand the concept of how a balanced schedule would benefit them, and that St. Louis really doesn't care about the Royals, and that Kansas City really doesn't care about the Cardinals. What they should do is, just like the NFL, play another division every year. Play the West 1 year, the Central 1 year, the East 1 year, and that way you'd see every player in baseball in your ballpark every third year, but it doesn't work that way. And that's why we should have seen Albert right now. If you just set it up so that you'd play every team in the AL West, 3 games at home, 3 games on the road every third year, it'd be very, very simple, but they don't want to do it.
Aren't you just as excited to potentially see Ohtani and Trout tomorrow, too?
Pretty awesome.
I mean, honestly, I'm excited to be there for the reception you think Pujols is going to get. I'm actually more excited to see those other two play than I am seeing Albert, because, of course, we saw him, and we saw him at his best.
Right. The ceremony of Albert will be great. The action, the baseball abilities currently of Trout and Ohtani definitely are what we want to see. And Greg Amzinger is with us now. Greg, BT and Ronj are out today. The voice of the Blues, Chris Kerber, is with us. Former Blue Reed Lowe is here. And how are you?
I am doing well, gentlemen. Nice to talk to you for the first time. What a ride. Enjoyed your both guys on the ice and booth, and I'm still on cloud nine for the greatest hockey season of my life.
You can tell Curbs, because you told us the story last week about you going to the ballpark cam for the watch party for the Blues game 7. It was game 7 at Busch Stadium.
Yeah. Kept going to our ballpark camera at Busch Stadium. We've got ballpark cameras in all 30 ballparks. And I didn't get a chance to see a single second of the game. I was live right when the puck dropped on MLB Network. And the only reaction I could get would be looking at the fans celebrate a goal. And when I saw them jumping up and down, I started jumping up and down. Therefore, they had to take the ballpark camera in Busch Stadium. And it became this integral part of our show that night, was the St. Louis kid on MLB Network reacting to the reaction of fans in Busch Stadium. That was my night. I never saw a second of the action, but because I'm a human jinx machine, I think I had something to do with the win.
We'll take whatever non-jinx thing we can get. One of my favorite pictures, Greg, of that I've gotten from friends was actually one that I got from Ron Culpa, who, as you know, is a huge Blues fan. Throughout these playoffs, he has carried his Brian Sutter jersey on the road with him. And when he goes out, whether it's in New York, Tampa, wherever, on an off night, or if they have a day game and he can watch the game at night, he's wearing his Brian Sutter jersey. Well, He was on the field. I think he had the second base at the time. And his wife, Corey, was on the road with him at Game 7. The stadium put up the final score on the big video board at the ballpark he was working. And his wife, Corey, took a picture of him, and you could see him turning around looking at the final score. And then the next picture of him is kind of with his head down as he's kind of overcome with emotion while he's out there umping the game. I mean, those are the kind of great stories that that championship runs can bring in.
Because you don't think you're ever going to see it in your lifetime. I was reserved for the idea that this is going to be some sort of weird curse that's going to last for another 120 years. I just thought that. There were years when we had Hull and Oates, and we had to win over 100 points every single regular season. We are the favorite. And then we get bounced in the first or second series of the postseason. And it just frustrated the hell out of me. The Blackhawks and the Red Wings, they always had our number. And it was just hard to be loyal. And that's why the group of season ticket holders, those fans that go to Blues games, and it's like walking to a country club when you go to a Blues game. If you're sitting in seats, people look around you and they go, "Oh, how do you know Bill and Edna?" And I'm like, "Oh, there's no StubHub. You know everybody. You sit next to the same people all the time." It is a loyal pack of fans that I tip my cap to. And Brian Sutter, was he number 22, I think?
He was 11. He was 11, yeah.
My favorite jersey was Cliff Ronning, number 7.
Yep.
So I love the Blues. They're part of my childhood. And now a major part of my adulthood. And just to watch, you know, someone like Joe Buck celebrate. Have you guys talked to Joe Buck yet? I'm dying to know how he reacted to the Blues winning, because I know he's one of the biggest fans of all time.
Well, and it's one of those opportunities where he can be a fan, you know, and some of the text exchanges are just awesome. What's this guy doing? What's that? You know, and it's fun when you Greg, think about it, like your situation there. All right, you know where you're from, so you know you grew up a diehard Cardinal fan, you know, but you're so into the sport, it takes away some of the fandom out of you to a certain degree in some of that. So if you can find that sports release in a sport that you're not covering every day, it can be a heck of a lot of fun.
There's no doubt about it. I mean, the first time I saw Kevin Weeks, because they were live from the site, either Boston or in St. Louis, when I saw Kevin Weeks for the first time star on the NHL Network and they shared studios with us, I gave him a huge hug. You know, I'm like, I felt like I needed to hug him because he was part of my postseason run. I was watching all the postgame shows on the NHL Network and hearing those guys talk about my squad, the St. Louis Blues, that stuff mattered to me in a big way. So, yeah, I can actually drop the mic for a second and put on my fanboy cap, and no one's going to be critical of my opinions because I can just be like everyone else and be a huge fan. I'm kind of like that about the Cardinals on MLB Network.
Kind of.
A little professionalism, but I fail miserably.
Hey, Greg, before we get to Albert Pujols returning to town, I want to ask about this particular team. And obviously Goldschmidt hit the game-winning home run last night. Can this team, as presently constituted, put together a run to be a legitimate playoff contender at the end of the year?
You know, a playoff contender, I'm glad you said that. If you said, can they win a World Series, I'm going to say no. Can they get to the playoffs? Absolutely. Are they a playoff team? I believe they are. The reason I say that is the back end of the bullpen has this potential to be right up there, maybe the best. The potential's there. I know Carlos Martinez blew the save last night, but if you've got him giving you multiple innings, Andrew Miller is looking better than he did the first month of the season. John Gant is still a force. And then, of course, you got Hicks in the back end throwing 105. The potential is there for this Cardinal bullpen to be every bit what maybe the National League version with the Yankees have. And that right there takes the pressure off the starting rotation. I know you can't just bullpen every game. I believe that. But I love this sport, and Randy has said this before. Baseball is broken up into two seasons, the marathon and the sprint. And some teams are constructed to win the marathon. I think the Minnesota Twins are going to win the marathon. They're really good. Once they get to the sprint, I'm not the Twins. If they have to play the Yankees with home field advantage, I'm taking the Yankees. If they're playing the Red Sox, see the Red Sox play a wild card game. I'm favoring the Red Sox. There are teams that are built to win the sprint. I think the Cardinals are built to get in through the marathon. My issue is with starting pitching being as important as it is in the postseason, you're going to need one more arm. They need one more win day guy if they want to make a dent and push the Los Angeles Dodgers, who, in my opinion, are the varsity team in a JV league. They are by far the best team in the National League. It's not even close.
So that being said, is there something out there? Is there something they can do to get that arm, or do they just sit? What's the thought there?
You know, I think Sean Mozeliak is a big fan of spending smart money, not a big fan of sending prize prospects. The Goldschmidt trade worked out because he knew the guy. He had heard about Goldschmidt. He knew he was the type of player that wanted to be committed to a team, upset that the Diamondbacks experience is going to come to an end. Already did a club-friendly contract before. He liked his chances of getting an extension. I don't see John Mozeliak overspending for a rental. So I don't think a Madison Bumgarner is a possibility whatsoever. Now, I was thinking that with the Washington Nationals fading, even though they haven't, this changed my line of thinking, but while the Washington Nationals were playing terrible baseball, which club would take on the Rusty Matriz's contract? We'll take every penny of it. And you know what? Here are a couple prospects. Let's bring the St. Louis boy home. I thought this could be a potential landing spot for Scherzer if the Cardinals were in a spot where they could actually need that one more arm to get to where they need to go. Now with the Nationals winning 16-23, they're back in the middle of this. That's not going to happen. Scherzer's last six starts, he got a 0.88 ERA. This is the best we've ever seen a Max Scherzer, even with a broken nose. So I don't know where – I look at it like this. I try to make these calls not from my personal opinion, but from the track record of the decision makers. I don't see John Mozeliak overspending for a rental in a rotation. I think what you see is what you get, and that's what the Cardinals going to run with. Can they make the postseason with that? Yes. He might add a bullpen arm. He's done that in the past, but I don't see the starting pitcher coming the Cardinals' way. It reminds me of the way I'm answering these Mickey Callaway questions. Hey, do you think Mickey Callaway should be manager at the end of the year? Well, personally, I think yes. Really? Because of the track record of the Wilpons, the guys that own the team, he has no shot at being the manager by the end of the year. So you have to look at it from the prism of the people that make the calls, and I don't see Mozeliak overspending for anyone.
Yeah, but Greg, can't you also look at it through the prism of recent successes and not only the Cardinals, and when I say recent successes, we're talking about a pretty amazing run of competitiveness over a 20-year period. But beyond that, you can look at other teams that have gone out and spent a bunch of money. Oh, we got to go get this guy. We got to go get that guy. It hasn't won a championship for the Dodgers. It hasn't recently, you know, won. You know, yes, okay, for the Red Sox, yes, they did do one recently. But more teams like Houston and those others are finding ways to be competitive doing that. The Cardinals have been in a mode where they're trying to transition essentially through one core while bringing up another core and staying competitive without burning too many assets. That you burn one or two extra assets and end up with one or two bad contracts, and it can get you for a long time.
I completely agree with you. And the Cardinals toe that line better than anybody. They stay competitive. There is no reboot. You don't see this team losing 100 games 3 years in a row like the Astros. But unlike the Astros, the Astros had a great core, but they knew there were one piece missing a couple years back. If you remember trade deadline, it was blatantly obvious that they needed to trade for Justin Verlander. And then they didn't do it. They came and went. And then they eventually did it. They don't win the World Series without Justin Verlander.
Right.
They don't. I look at the Cardinals in the same way, not as talented of a core as what the Astros had that year. But based on the landscape of the Los Angeles Dodgers being the best team in the National League and how weak the National League is, in my opinion, compared to them, if you can just get to the NLCS or if you can just take on that heavyweight team in a single postseason series, anything can happen. We don't know. Rich Hill just left last night's game with discomfort in his forearm. Who knows how significant of an injury that is? And other injuries come and go. You have no idea. If you can get a shot at the heavyweight, anything can happen in a short series. I don't see the Cardinals being the team that would go get a Verlander. You know, Zach Greinke, not going to happen. I don't think a Mike Minor really, you know, moves the needle that much because the Rangers are at a moment where they're still very relevant. I don't think if Samardzija does that. I don't think if Johnny Cueto comes back and looks decent, I don't think he does that. There's not that guy that's going to change the complexion of the Cardinals rotation. Would Madison Bumgarner be that guy? Maybe, but that's a rental, and I don't see Mozeliak doing it.
You can watch Greg Amzinger on MLB Tonight at 10 o'clock, plus tomorrow's MLB Network Showcase game will feature Houston at the Yankees at 6 p.m., and I guess Aaron Judge is going to be back for that. But here in St. Louis, Albert Pujols will be back the eighth year of the contract, and he finally makes the return to St. Louis tomorrow, Greg.
It's crazy, man. I would give anything to be at this game. I'm not kidding you, because I have so many great memories, like every other Cardinal fan, of Albert Pujols and how dominant he was. Those first 11 seasons were remarkable. Well, we'll never see anything like that again from a player. We really won't. I mean, even Mike Trout's not hitting 330 every single season like Albert Pujols did, driving at 30 or driving at 100, hitting 30 or more home runs. He was a machine, and that's why he's got a perfect nickname. The thing that I can't wait to see is the reception that he gets, because, as you know, Randy, the Classic candidates for St. Louis are going to adore him. They're going to see him. I don't know. I don't expect those. I really don't. I don't expect a couple knuckleheads will boo him. But for the most part, you're going to hear cheers. What I want to do is I want to go side by side. Here's Albert Pujols' reception. Listen to that. Now let's hear Bryce Harper's reception in D.C. just a few months ago. And they won't even come close. And that's a shame that other fans don't get it. Free agency is something that is earned. You're good enough to be in the league, in the best sport in the world that long, and compete at a high level to be paid handsomely by many people who offer you money. You shouldn't boo people because they decided to take a good shot. Albert Pujols, there are so many knocks on him. It's a great thing the Cardinals didn't sign him, but he plays every day. He plays every day, even when he can barely run the bases, he's playing. So I still am a huge Albert guy, and this is going to be a really cool moment to see fans in St. Louis showcase how classy they are by just paying respect to a guy that gave 11 great years of memories.
It should be an awesome weekend. Greg, we'll be watching tonight at 10 o'clock. Have a great show, and I'm sure that we'll be in touch, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right, fellas. That was a lot of fun. We'll do it again.
Thanks, Greg. Greg Amsinger, MLB Network Lindenwood grad, joining us in the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN. We're headed down the stretch as we head towards the NBA draft. One segment left, so get your texts into the Hot Shots text line for a game of Would You Rather. That's coming your way next on 101 ESPN. Chris Kerber, Reed Lowe, Randy Carricker, and Big Sizz is here for a game of Would You Rather. Thanks for your text to the Hot Shots text line, 65780. And with your Would You Rathers for us, here is Big Sizz.
So, guys, we had the question the other day. It was a Would You Rather about throwing a parachute out of a plane and chasing after it. So, similar one here. Would you rather walk a tightrope between two skyscrapers in New York City or throw your parachute out of a plane and jump after it?
Do I have the parachute while I'm walking the tightrope?
No.
I'm taking the plane.
I'm going to take
There's at least a chance then.
I weigh a lot more than the parachute, so I know I will drop quicker, which gives me a better chance to catch up to the parachute.
I'm just worried about being able to catch that parachute, put it on in midair, and pull the chute.
Randy, if I put a piece of tape from in the hallway outside the studio here,
I would have difficulty.
What are the odds of you staying on the piece of tape?
Not high at the moment.
Okay.
But at least I could practice. I don't know. How can you practice throwing a parachute out of a plane and then jumping out?
For the sake of all, I don't think you can practice that on the hallway at ESPN Studios. I'm sorry. Yes, there's going to be a little bouncing going on, and that's just crazy.
For the sake of all of us sports fans of yours, go for the parachute because you got no chance on a tightrope.
I'm taking the tightrope, and here's the thing. If I fall, at least I can grab on and pull myself across with my hands. I would have no chance with that parachute.
Wait a minute. Hang on. You can't tell me that you're going to have faith in your hands to catch you on a tightrope if you don't have faith to catch the parachute.
It's not catching the parachute. It's first, can I?
You can put it on backwards. Can I get my chest first?
Can I get my body into a position? Okay, that thing it's dropped 10 seconds before I'm dropped. I leave the plane, right?
You'll catch it.
Close enough. Yeah.
Okay.
Sure.
There's no chance for me there.
Okay, so what we've determined, you're dead either way.
We got
splat no matter what.
Care plunk.
You are in a dark room with an angry animal. Would you rather that be a porcupine or a skunk?
Skunk.
Oh, skunk.
Yeah. Porcupine can hurt.
You can catch a skunk and plug it with your thumb.
Yeah, skunk is going to be disgusting.
I've been around a skunk up close. It's a lot worse than it looks.
It's bad. I hit one with my car one time. The car was never the same.
It's a nasty, nasty animal.
Yeah, but you got a chance of surviving. You take a quill to the eye in the dark. You don't know where that porcupine's shooting at.
Exactly, right.
I mean, that's survival.
That's why I'm going with the skunk. I could kill the skunk. It'd be dead, and I'd be passed out from the stench. But
yeah, once we kill the skunk, are we allowed out of the room?
And the porcupine?
Absolutely.
Okay. All right, then I'm going to try to kill the skunk.
Yeah.
According to the text line, guys, we're not much of scientists here. Terminal velocity says that you would not fly faster than the parachute.
Don't listen.
According to the text line, I don't know.
Would you have to get to terminal velocity? Here's the thing. Terminal velocity is something you reach. Right?
We have like four texts of this.
When you leave a plane and hit the ground, that's terminal velocity.
Yeah. It's not the fall that kills you. It's a sudden stop at the end.
Yeah. Somebody says you wouldn't drop faster unless the parachute backpack meets tons of wind resistance.
No, that's not true because I've seen movies.
Yeah, I've seen a movie where that happened.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I mean, Tom Cruise.
Did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that texter is reading the wrong science book.
Watching the wrong science movies. Yeah. It's a documentary, we know.
Because you don't start at terminal velocity yet, right? You got to get to that point. I've got to catch you before
we get
there.
I just graduated from high school 2 years ago. I don't know what you're talking. Why are you looking at me, Curbs?
Because you took science more recently than we did.
You took it 6 times, Reed. Come on.
I could teach a class. I just couldn't pass it.
Which, by the way, one of the Blues owners, Ed Potter, was one of my science teachers in high school.
Really?
Yeah, so I may get a text that said, you're a dummy. But I'm going with it because I believe it.
Would you rather have eyes in the palms of your hands or eyes in the back of your head?
Back of my head.
Yeah, back of my head. Well, I don't know. I could have a lot of fun with the... Wait, do I keep the ones on the front of my head, too?
Yes. Of course.
Yeah. Right? Oh, but I don't know. I could have a lot of fun with the palm of my hand.
I guess you have to close those eyes when you wash your hands and stuff, right?
Yeah, you'd have to, yeah.
Yeah, that's so... Yeah, yeah.
If just, you're uncomfortable just wearing a hat, though, like I am now, if I had eyes in the back of my head, that'd be a little uncomfortable, too.
Think about this, guys. Like, if the eyes are your back of your head. Like, you can't... Like, right now, I could drop my hands down, even though it'd be upside down, I could see what's behind me. I could raise them up and see the front of the line for
that's
the first
true.
Time ever.
Superhero stardom there. I got... Yeah. I'm picking...
Okay, yeah,
I'm you know what? I'm going hands with Curbs, too.
You just changed my mind. We got a
salesman, too. Yep. Not only is he a voice, he's a salesman, too.
Or how about, like, if you're looking for... a quarter that's under the couch or something.
Oh,
or
that'd be great.
You drop something down the side of your seat in the car.
Bingo. I don't recommend though reaching down low in a stall in a bathroom. Somebody's
shaking
gonna think
hands
the
wouldn't be fun though.
Yeah.
That's shaking. You have to close it.
Fist bump.
Fist bump.
Yeah.
So we learned earlier that young people are turning away from deodorant. Would you rather wear no deodorant or every time you need to shave your face you have to wax it instead?
I'm waxing.
Oh, I'll wax it. Hurts.
Yeah, but because if you wax it, though, you've only got to wax maybe once a month.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, but I've been waxed, and it's just not cool.
I've had my ears waxed, and it's painful.
Yeah, but you smell yourself 24/7 without deodorant.
Yeah, that's pretty bad. Yeah, I because of that, Curbs, I'm going to go with waxing. And if you wax every day, it's actually probably not going to hurt as much,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I mean, that's the whole thing. I think if you wax every day, there's nothing to yank out.
But when I shower once a day, I get to have soap, don't I?
Yeah, you get soap.
So, yeah, you can have soap. You just got to shower more.
Hey, you want to hear a messed up story here real quick?
Yeah.
I got a segue for this. I went to meet a friend of mine at Jay McGraw's in Clayton. Mm-hmm. And this woman standing outside near the parking meter, she says, don't park here. You got to pay to park here. Park in the parking lot. And she was so adamant about it, I went and parked in the parking lot. She came back in. She goes, you know, I work at that salon here. She goes, you need a haircut? Really? Okay. Right on bulk. I go, no. She goes, need your back waxed? I went, what? Went from there, and she goes, and I ended up going in, got an eyebrow waxed, nose hair cleaned out, everything. I'm like, this has got to be a riot. I got to go find out what's going on.
What a setup.
I love it.
That's amazing. Thanks, Big Sis.
Thank you.
And Curbs? There's our producer, Brad Barnes. Curbs, good to see you. Great to have you in with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me in. And, we might have to do this more often.
I think that might happen. Curbs will be with us as the voice of the Blues here on 101 ESPN in the 2019-20 season and beyond for your Stanley Cup champion St. Louis Blues. Losey, always good to see you.
Love being here, boys.
Great job, as always, by our board operator, the one and only Mike Ryder. And don't forget, the NBA draft is coming up. And then tomorrow, we are at the Gateway Arch Grounds from 3 to 7. Hope you'll come by as we start our summer tour. And then Monday, we are in Troy at the Ink Spot for somebody getting a tattoo. For all of us, thanks for tuning in, texting in, and being a part of the show. Till tomorrow at 3. Good night, St. Louis.